Welcome, welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is episode 96.
And if this is your first time joining us, welcome.
Welcome.
So next week, we are going to be going to the Stimson Hospital, which is a private investigation that we had won from the auction at the Dead Time Stories event we went to back in April. So I'm super excited about that. Are you?
I said Eulis.
Okay. Are you getting a little bit more comfortable about doing investigations now that we've done a couple more?
At the Bell, yeah. Well, anywhere else, no.
Well, we can't keep going to the Bell because time's running out on that place.
Yeah, I know that.
But the more you do it, the more comfortable you're going to get with it. And maybe she might be more hands-on at some point. Get her in a blindfold and listen to Spirit Box one of these times. Come on. Just one time.
Don't know.
Come on. You can do it. If you want Sarah to do...
Pressuring me into it ain't going to make it happen.
If you want Sarah to do Estes methods, you know, live on Facebook, let us know in the group.
Yeah, that probably won't happen.
You never know. But anyhow, so it's a David episode this week.
Yep.
And I'm going to be doing somewhat of a... I guess it's not really origins. It's more of a catalyst story of sorts, but it is true crime.
Okay. Like
the murder of Kitty Genovese.
I've heard the name. I don't know that I've heard
the story.
You don't
know the story? Well, with what happened with her murder, it's what was the catalyst that helped spark 911 coming into existence.
Okay.
So you ready to get started?
Yep.
All right, let's get going. So Catherine Susan Kitty Genovese was born July 7th, 1935 in Brooklyn, New York. And she was the oldest of five children to Rachel and Vincent Genovese. Like most Italian families, she was raised Catholic, and they lived in the Park Slope neighborhood of Brooklyn. During her teenage years, she attended an all-girls Prospect Heights high school. It was said she had a sunny disposition and was self-assured beyond her years. In 1954, her mother witnessed a murder, which I couldn't find any more information out on this, and her family moved to New Canaan, Connecticut, while she remained in Brooklyn living with her grandparents until after she finished high school, preparing for her upcoming marriage. Later that same year, her marriage was annulled due to her sexuality. Kitty was gay.
Okay.
She would have several clerical jobs, which she wasn't fond of this kind of work, and would later take on bartending. She would work at Eve's 11th Hour on Jamaica Street in Queens, New York, and started managing the bar because the owner was pretty much absent all the time. Kitty did want to open an Italian restaurant and would end up working double shifts to save her money to achieve this goal of hers. She had a brief run-in with the law in 1961 and was charged for bookmaking for taking bets for horse races from the bar patrons. Kitty and her friend Dee Gariani were fined $50, which is around $500 today. And that was like the extent of her criminal record. On March 13th, 1964, around 2:30 a.m., Kitty would begin to head home from her job in her red Fiat. While waiting for a red light, she would spot her attacker, Winston Mosley, who was sitting in a Chevy Corvair. Around 3:15 a.m., she would park her car in the lot for the Long Island Railroad Station in Kew Gardens, about 100 feet from her home. Mosley would end up attacking Kitty after he followed her home. Mosley was armed with a hunting knife, and he would end up approaching Kitty as she would... And she would notice this, and she would take off towards her building. Mosley would overtake her and stab her twice in the back, and she would end up screaming, "Oh my God, he's stabbing me, help me." Several neighbors would hear her cry for help, but only a few would recognize this as a cry for help. Robert Moser, one of her neighbors, would shout at Mosley, "Leave that girl alone," and he would end up running away while Kitty would slowly make her way to the rear of the building. Her way to the backside of the building that she lived in, out of the view of any other possible witnesses. Several witnesses would see Mosley enter his car and drive away, but he would end up returning about 10 minutes later, hiding his face with a wide-brimmed hat. He would end up searching the parking lot looking for Kitty, who was barely conscious and lying in a hallway in the back of the building where she lived. If this door had been locked, Kitty could have possibly survived because she would still have been outside and not out of view.
Yeah.
Being out of view, Mosley would end up finding her here again, stabbing Kitty Genovese several more times before he would end up eventually raping her and stealing approximately $49 from her. Genovese's girlfriend at the time, Mary Ann Zelenko, reflected on the crime in 2004 in a review with Sound Portraits Productions, saying, "I still have a lot of anger towards people because they could have saved her. I mean, all the steps along the way when he attacked her three times, and then sexually assaulted her, too, was when she was dying. I mean, you look out at the window and you see this happening and you don't help. That's how do you live with yourself knowing you didn't do anything? But one neighbor did do something. Sophia Farr, a close friend and neighbor, would find Kitty in the hallway shortly after her attack, telling Kitty help is on the way while she held her in the hallway. Kitty arrived home at 3:15 a.m. and her attack would last about 30 minutes. First responders wouldn't come until 4:15 a.m. and she died en route to the hospital and was laid to rest on March 16, 1964. Initially, police considered Kitty Genovese's girlfriend, Marianne Zelenko, instead of trying to find her actual killer, as one of the main suspects. They spent 6 hours having two different homicide interrogators spend more time questioning her about her relationship with Genovese than actually trying to find who actually did this.
Why did they think it was the girlfriend?
They cannot find any reasoning why. It was this was quoted from a book that I couldn't find it from anywhere else.
Huh.
March 19th, 6 days later, her actual attacker would be arrested. Winston Mosley was arrested for suspected robbery in Ozone Park after police found a TV in the trunk of his car. Mosley claimed to be a mover after being questioned by Raul Clary. He would ask one of his other neighbors, Jack Brown, about one of their other neighbors moving out where Mosley got this TV from. Clary would then call police while Brown would go and disable Mosley's car so he couldn't escape before the police arrived. Her attacker, Winston Mosley, was 29 years old at the time of his attack in Kitty Genovese. He was married with three kids, worked for the Rand Remington Company as a tab operator, which is prepping punch cards for data input for computers at the time, and his wife worked as a nurse on the night shift. He had no prior criminal record and would confess to killing and sexually assaulting two other women while being questioned about Kitty Genovese's murder. He would go into detail about his attack, which corroborated with physical evidence at the crime scene. He said that he got up around 2 a.m. that night while his wife was at work and drove through the Queens neighborhood to find a victim. He also said he simply wanted to kill women because they were easier and they didn't fight back, even though Kitty Genovese had wounds that suggested she did try to fight him off.
So just, it's a day. Let's go hunt women.
Yeah. What
the fuck?
Mosley would also confess to murdering two other women as well, Ann Mae Johnson, who had been shot and burned to death in her apartment in South Ozone Park weeks earlier before Kitty, and 15-year-old Barbara Clarix in her parents' home in Springfield Gardens in July of 1963. He also did confess to 30 to 40 other burglaries he committed. His trial began on June 8, 1964, and he initially pleaded not guilty, but his attorneys changed his plea to a not guilty by reason of insanity to his charges of first and second-degree murder, attempted kidnapping, and second-degree robbery. Just remember, this was also 13 years before Tony Kurtz's trial that brought nationwide change to the reason of insanity plea.
Yeah.
And if you don't remember those, go back and listen to episode 7 and 8. Those are the episodes that I did that story in. He would be found guilty for Kitty Genovese's murder, but not the other two, and be sentenced to death for the murder. However, in 1967, this would be reduced to life imprisonment after the New York Court of Appeals found Mosley should have been able to argue he was medically insane.
Oh, Jesus.
One of his psychological analysis was that he was a possible necrophile. I was like, yep, I'm just going to leave that line alone there. And I'm going to not dig into how that's all comes about and whatnot. I already know, can tell by the word alone what that means. But I don't know, maybe it's one of those macabre stories we can do one of these days. Just kidding.
That's not really anything I'd care to deep dive into.
Same here. We're gonna leave it right there at that. If you don't know what necrophile is, go look it up for yourself.
Yeah.
Judge J. Erwin Shapiro said at the time of the trial, "I don't believe in capital punishment, but when I see a monster like this, I wouldn't hesitate to pull the switch myself." Mosley would die in prison at the age of 81 in 2016 after being denied parole 18 times. In most parole hearings, he showed no remorse for what he did. He also did try to escape prison at one point in 1968 after a minor surgery from a self-inflicted wound. And he also participated in the Attica prison riots, which might be an episode for me one day. So with that being said, there's the crime. This, everything that happened with this, there was allegedly 38 witnesses. The guy, I can't remember, I forgot to put him in here. He wrote a book about all this. He actually figured it out. It's around to a few dozen witnesses also. But the New York Times reported it to being 38 witnesses. But like, I seen video of this neighborhood, like, of her girlfriend talk about the neighborhood. It was nice. Yeah. It was quiet. Everything, like, it was mostly Holocaust survivors that lived in this neighborhood.
Okay.
So you already know they're not going to be out there doing a bunch of shit.
Right.
So before her murder, 911 was already being flirted with. I guess you could say, a lack of a better term. The International Fire Chiefs Association was actually wanting to come up with a single, easy, quicker-to-remember number to dial. 911, for the most part.
Right.
So before that, in the city of New York, residents would have to call their local police station or dial 0 to an operator to have them being connected to that local police station. So once after they talked to the police about what they need them to come out there for, then they'd have to wait for them to come on their own discretion, basically, at that point. But one of the other factors that why nobody also tried to help Kitty was is because witnesses did see her get up and stagger around to the back of the building and out of sight and assumed she wasn't as hurt as bad as she claimed to be from being stabbed.
Okay.
And, of course, there's also people just assume somebody else would call. They don't want to get involved.
I mean, but did they not know back then that you could call and be like, hey, this just happened. Okay, bye.
Right. Well, that was one of the things that came up was somebody said that I'm pretty sure my dad had called that night when it happened, but you don't know. You don't remember that. One of the witnesses to this crime actually allegedly stood at the top of the staircase and watched her being stabbed, but they said, I didn't want to get involved. And one of the statements that Mosley did make in court was that he was counting on this type of behavior because of how New York City can be, so he can get away with his crimes. How everybody keeps their head down.
Yeah.
And keeps to themselves, doesn't want to get involved with anything. This case is looked over yearly in schools on all levels of education to discuss the bystander effect, where most people are like Leslie to help or intervene in a situation where there's other bystander presence. The bystander effect. And this is like studying mostly in like psychology classes.
I was gonna say, I don't remember studying that shit in school. But you're talking like college course type stuff.
So I know there's not a whole lot on this, but I mean, this is like I said, this is like an origins thing. This is what really got 911 kicked off was this incident here. There's so many witnesses and nobody knows who called or whatever. So that's,
yeah.
Her murder is what kickstarted 911 to become a more nationwide thing after this. The first 911 call actually took place in 1968 in Haleyville, Alabama, and this call was made by Representative Franklin Fite, the Speaker of the Alabama House of Representatives. And 911 was selected as an emergency number for how quickly it can be dialed on a rotary phone and wasn't even established as an area code yet.
Huh.
So that is why 911 is 911, because you got to remember, for some of us who have actually used a rotary phone,
yep,
you got to hit that 9 and it goes all the way around, and then the one, and it probably is because it's the very end of the dial and the beginning of the dial.
I know, but it takes a long time for that one to go all the way around and then boop, 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 all the way back up.
Right.
So you think like 999 or 988.
999 is actually used in the UK.
Well, why didn't they adopt it here?
I don't. Because we have to do everything different.
A universal
number
for police.
I understand that. But that's just what AT&T had selected because they are the ones that actually put it out.
Gotcha. Out there
to be a nationwide thing with the American Telephone and Telegraph Company, if you did not know what AT&T stood for.
I did not.
Well, now you learned something else today.
Sure did.
But yeah, unfortunately, there wasn't much I could find out about this other than it being, you know, one of those, you know, copy paste things from a whole lot of other websites and whatnot that didn't say the same thing over and over again. But
with it being that old, it's sometimes hard to find a lot of information.
If it's not something like Howard Unruh, for example, stuff like that, you know, there's not a lot of stuff put out there. Like this was, I don't want to say it like this, this was probably one out of thousands of murders that happened in New York City that year.
But in New York, it wouldn't surprise me.
And not to take away from her death or anything, but, you know, I mean, that's the hard truth of it, you know. Not a lot of that stuff's going to get a lot of attention, like certain other things, like Son of Sam did because of what was going on, because almost being the same time period.
And honestly, at that time, her being gay probably also,
and yes, that was also
made it shy away from being in the news.
Yeah, because like 3 hours of interrogation, was it I said?
Or six hours.
6 hours, and they were more focused on that than trying to find out why somebody would attack her.
Yep.
It was like I was going to do the Stonewall riots for this month also, but once I saw how much information there was on that, I'm just like,
I'm going to need more time on that.
So I'll have to do better for Pride Month next year on that one.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can weed out the people we don't want us listening. Let them hear the story about people getting kicked out of fucking drag queens because, you know, they wanted to arrest them for just doing what they wanted to do. Not hurt nobody.
I wonder what drag queen I can write about this time.
Yeah.
I did Divine last time.
Yep.
That was a good little episode.
Yep.
I knew I had heard the name before, but yeah, I never knew the story or that it led to 911 being like what it is today.
Yep.
Very cool. Very cool. Not, I mean, not cool.
I know what you mean by that. So, not much to talk about this episode other than, you know, make sure, you know, come see us on Twitch from time to time. You know, we've been talking about doing some other things on there other than the Lego build that we did not too long ago. We talked about playing some more game stuff.
Yep.
But who knows? We'll see what else we got going.
Yeah.
So until next time.
Remember to creep it real.
And stay spooky.
Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabreemporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast.